Hello there, it's me, Sean Connery, probably. If you enjoy the podcast you're about to hear, why not purchase a book by your host, Jim Hodgson? You don't have to read it, if you don't want to, if you don't know how. Throw it at someone, use it to prop up a lamp. I don't know, I'm not an idea man, I'm just saying. Purchase a book, submit. Could be a part of commerce, there's nothing wrong with that. For queen and country, people probably say. I don't know. You know what you should really do? Go out and get yourself a copy of Zardoz. You should watch that film, particularly the parts where I'm wearing a pair of panties. Pants, we call them, I think. When you look at the screen, you say to yourself, you say to yourself, boy, that Connery. He's got himself a prodigious package. Anyway, what I'm saying is if you enjoy this podcast, definitely buy a book by your author, your host, Jim Hodgson, and tell a friend about the podcast. Go on and write something yourself, for God's sakes, and sit there looking at people's packages on the screen. All right, then. Welcome to The Outliners. I am your host, Jim Hodgson. On this first episode of the new podcast, I'm going to deliver a statement of purpose. Of course, this statement of purpose will be a living document, free to be amended by us at any time going forward. Begin at the beginning, the king said very gravely, and go on till you come to the end, then stop. That quote is, of course, from the classic novel 50 Shades of Twilight Potter. A true classic. So, what are we doing here? On this podcast, I'm going to ask fellow authors to submit a basic idea for a story, then an outline for that story. And I don't mean to say authors as in they have to be novel writers. We can do screenwriters, sketch writers, anybody who gets through a story. Each episode, I'm going to go over those outlines with you. I think that by deconstructing these two steps of the story planning process, we can all learn a little bit about other people's processes, which means we necessarily, and by extension, improve our own processes. And then we'll be able to say, hey, I've upped my process, now up yours. I also believe that by focusing on the outline, we can touch on some unseen challenges of writing. Now, George R.R. Martin says, there are two types of writers. Those who wear Greek fishermen's caps and assholes. I'm just kidding. He says there are architects and gardeners. I've also heard them called planners and pantsers. Some folks plan their books out. Others just figure them out as they go along. Now, the problem with this architect slash gardener dichotomy is, I think most of us are a mixture of the two. If you are a famous, traditionally published author with a ravenous fan base, or self-published with a ravenous fan base, maybe you can afford to fritter about for a couple of months or years, world-building, designing an intricate magic system, and generally becoming intoxicated on the odor of your own farts. Well, not me. Like most of us, I am down in the muck, barely scraping along, trying to build an audience. And to do that, I have to write fast, I have to publish often, and to do those things, I gotta make word count. Word count is everything. For me, I'm pretty comfortable at 2K a day. I got a lot of irons and a lot of fires. I've gone above that, for days at a time. And I can do it as long as I don't have anything else going on. It's actually really enjoyable to get in the groove like that. But if you're going to make your daily word count, especially if it's 2,000 or 5,000, you need to bias toward action. You don't want to get bogged down trying to edit what you've just written or trying to think too much. You need to get in the zone and get the words out there and then edit them later. Now, you're going to have moments when you're not entirely sure how to get from where you are, the plot point you're on, to the next. And in those instances, you're just going to have to garden, even if you are an architect. That's what I mean by most of us are somewhere in the middle. You're going to have to use both of those skills. Now, if you're new to novel writing or story writing, screenwriting, what have you, finishing a story that works well your very first time without an outline can be very, very hard. That's how I wrote my first novel, and it took way too long. It took almost 3 years for me to get through my first novel years ago. Now I could bust one out in, you know, a matter of weeks, just depending on how much time I can clear between, you know, personal engagements and things like that. But if I could lock myself into a tower somewhere, you know, I'm always using a tower as an example of a very, very successful author just ascending to the top of the tower. People make fun of me a lot, so I was trying not to go with the tower imagery, and I've already done it right out of the gate. What a schmuck. But what was I saying? Yes, you can make a large word count if you get used to it. As I say, there might be moments when you're not sure exactly where you're going and you got a garden. So most of the time, I think when people get into the middle of their first novel and they get struck with what they call writer's block, I think what's really happened is they've written themselves off the map of where they were trying to go with the story, or they never had a map to begin with. Now, on the subject of writer's block, let me be clear. In the universe of this podcast, and in my opinion, in the greater universe, it does not exist. Writer's block is not a thing. I'll prove it to you. A buddy of mine who works from home had writer's block once. So he went out into his kitchen because there was a crew in there doing some painting on his cabinets, and he went out there just to talk to him. And after a couple of hours of standing around and chatting with these guys, they're like, "Hey, listen, if you don't mind us asking, shouldn't you be working or something?" And he was like, "Oh, no. No, I can't work, unfortunately. I have writer's block." Yeah, you know. So, and by this time, it's 5 p.m. in the afternoon, so the crew's packing up and they leave. The next morning, he comes out into his kitchen again, and he finds the crew all sitting around the kitchen table playing cards. He's like, "Hey, aren't you guys supposed to be painting my cabinets?" And they were like, "No, we have painter's block. Call your boss right now and tell him that you can't possibly come to work tomorrow because you have programmer's block or dentist's block or whatever you do for work." Absurd, right? So why should writers get to be blocked? They don't. If you want to take this seriously, you do not get blocked. You will be challenged, but you will persevere. I think when people are challenged and they give it a name and they say, "Oh, I have writer's block," it's just an excuse to not overcome the challenge. And it's hard. It is hard, but you'll do it. You can do it. And an outline can help. Starting a new work of any kind is easy and fun. It's just like casually dating somebody that you just met. You're having fun, you're learning, you're sharing. It's a blast. But finishing work is like being in a real, grown-up, committed relationship. You have to be honest, you have to be vulnerable, you have to back up sometimes and admit that you were wrong. And those things are hard. Of course, I don't have that problem. I've never made a mistake of any kind. You can ask my wife. How can you possibly keep heading in the right direction when the pressure is on like that? You need an outline. Now, my opinion is that one other way that writers get stuck is that they don't know what their theme is. There needs to be some sort of theme. Now, a lot of people will begin wailing and gnashing their teeth at this point, and they'll say, "Oh, I hate it when books try to preach at me. Don't you dare try to preach at me." Okay, first of all, guys, a theme is only preaching when you don't agree. When you agree, it's an anthem. Now, secondly, why the hell would anybody go through the mental anguish it takes to write a novel if there's nothing they are burning to say? I cannot imagine. Somebody probably does it, but I can't imagine who or why. So, to sum up, I think you need a thematic concept. I think you need a thematic statement, meaning you need, you know, there's a thing that you're trying to say, and there's an opinion you have about that thing that you're trying to say, and I think you need an outline. But I don't know those things for sure. If you are listening to this and you're making $100,000 a year selling books with none of those and no preparation, hey, I salute you and your success, and I would like to have my work featured in your mailing list. Not a joke, seriously. Share the wealth. By studying other writers' approaches to writing, I intend to find out what authors besides myself think and how they do it. I'm trying to learn something here. If you're an established author and you never ever write an outline, that's fine. But for the purposes of this podcast, you'll have to write one. You can do it. Come on, gardeners. Now, outlines can also help us illustrate that ideas are not the important part of a novel. Some people say there are only 7 stories. Some say there are only 2. Now, it's a little bit ridiculous because viewed at sufficient remove, all stories are stuff happened, right? Now, I see a lot of people saying, well, I have an idea for a book, but I saw it's already been done before, so I can't do it. Hey, guys, lots of stuff has already been done before. That doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. People have made love before lots of times. Is that going to stop you from trying to make love? I hope not, for your sake. Why? Because it's special to you when you do it, even if it's basically the same thing everyone else is doing. Obviously, some of you get a little bit wacky with it, but hey, that's your business. I just want you to be happy. Writing is the same way. Ideas are nothing. Execution is everything. If everyone who listens to this podcast wrote a book about each of the outlines we're going to discuss here, using those exact plot points, exact same, all writers, the resulting books would be different. If you sat down right now and wrote a novel called Star Wars, using everything you know about Star Wars, even though you might have seen the movies a billion times, it would be a different experience. And you would be sued into the ground and probably shot as well. So don't do that. Just take your idea, use it to form an outline, and then write your story. And we are going to get into how to make that happen here together, guys. That's what we're trying to do. That is the Outliners. That is the podcast. Now, let me quickly address what this podcast is not. For one thing, I will not end declarative sentences with a rising tone. All right? You know who you are. Second, I will not be critiquing outlines as such. We're going to examine them. We're going to talk about what we think works. But we're not here to be lofty. I'm not an expert. I'm a student. I'm looking to learn more about my craft from my colleagues. Again, I'm not trying to ascend into a tower and tell people what is good and bad. Look, there is not even such a thing as objective reality. So why would there be objectively good or bad fiction? The very idea is absurd. Besides which, as working writers, we have plenty of opportunities to have our work excreted upon by the visageless horde of the internet. It's not my intention to be one of those. I'm in this to learn, to share, to grow, and all of that while wearing no pants. So, that is our statement of purpose. Now, because this is the very first episode, I am going to place myself into the hot seat. I am going to come up with a theme and an outline right now, live. So here we go. I'm going to start by looking on Reddit and finding something that makes me mad. You might think that's a weird way to start a book, but I'm going to find something that irritates me, because if it irritates me, then I will have something that I want to say about that issue. So that'll be my theme and my thematic statement. And then all I got to do is bust out the outline. So here we go. Okay, here we go. Number three item on the top of Reddit at this very moment is a political cartoon. And there's a baby in a basket. And there's a very a white-haired old white guy yelling at the baby in the basket, as you often do. As babies really appreciate being shouted at. The old white guy is saying, "Born with a pre-existing condition, were you? Well, don't expect us healthy, God-fearing citizens to pay for your bad choice, kid." All right, so basically the cartoon is making the joke that old white guys who are in the American Republican Party have some contradicting opinions. They on the one hand they believe that life is sacred and all babies should be born and no one should ever have an abortion. But once the baby's born, if it has any kind of pre-existing condition, that's your financial responsibility, and they're never going to help fix that. So that is a dystopian YA young adult novel basically waiting to be written. So the thing about addressing something that makes you mad, in my opinion, is that it's tough to write the story about it without becoming that thing. It's better, in my opinion, if your main character is somebody who has the opinion that you want to fight against. And that way, over the course of your novel, they learn something. So let's see. So we'll begin our outline here. Theme. What is our theme? So our main character will need to be an old white guy. I know that ruins my young adult situation, because you can't have an old white guy be the main character of a young adult novel. You need it to be a young adult so that the readers can identify and they can understand that they're special snowflakes and they'll show those old white people. So maybe this isn't a YA novel, but our main character is going to be an old white guy because I want him to be the epitome of the thing that we are trying to argue against. So it's going to end up, it going to end up being somewhat 1984-ish. So let's see, I'll just start the novel here. It was a bright, cold day in April and the clocks were striking 13. No, just kidding. Okay, so our main character is an old white guy. And we probably need it to be that his job is that he determines what an existing conditions are. But that's a little heavy. It's very heavy to be determining pre-existing conditions of babies. Let's make him something really dumb, like really ineffectual. That way we can have a more humorous novel. We can make a larger point with a funnier novel. So rather than have him choose pre-existing conditions of babies, let's have him be like an HOA president. He's an HOA president, and his job is to determine whose yard. So I guess that makes our theme. That means that our theme would be something along the lines of preconceived notions, not to misuse the word conceived since we were talking about babies before. Preconceived notions. And then our thematic statement will be that preconceived notions are stupid. Okay, here we go. So our main character is an old white guy. He's an HOA president, and his job is to judge yards in a suburban neighborhood. And for this to work, we'll need our... Okay, so we're kind of getting into Act 1 now. So in Act 1, we're going to show what life is like before some crazy new thing happens. Okay, so Act 1, we need to show our... HOA president in daily life, the beauty of the subdivision. Maybe this guy took his job. He rose to power as HOA president because we want him to be very proud of. We want him to be very proud of his position so that he'll consider himself to be a very fair person. But from the outside, he won't seem so fair. And then the inciting incident. So when we've shown how beautiful this neighborhood is and how much he loves his job, we'll need to salt this Act One with some foreshadowing of what eventually happens in the story. And at this point, we don't necessarily know what that is. So when we get to Act Three, when we've roughed out Act Three, we'll come back and salt in a little bit of foreshadowing in Act One, because otherwise we'll end up in a deus ex machina sort of situation. So deus ex machina, you all already know this, but I'm going to explain it anyway, is translates to God in the machine. And what happens is if you don't foreshadow the thing that's going to happen late in your book, then when it does happen, it seems like it just came out of nowhere. People, it's helpful if the reader has a sense of rising dread, whether they know it 100% or not. It's nice if it can be subtle, so that when it happens, people are like, oh, that makes sense, but they didn't necessarily see it coming. If people see it coming too much, then, you know, maybe you're being a little bit heavy-handed. So we'll come back and salt that in later. Okay, so he's president of the HOA. He's got a beautiful subdivision. He rose to power. Probably he's not, I would say he's probably not 100% respected. Because people who are authoritarians like that in a small way aren't usually 100% respected. So the inciting incident, now this will be the beginning of Act Two. So what happens in Act Two is something's got to happen where we need a lot of pressure and we need a situation that our main character did not see coming. So there needs to be something that happens with Yards that he didn't see coming. What if there are new strains of grass that are genetically modified and they can be different colors? I think that's interesting, because there won't in the HOA documents, there won't be any mention that grass has to be green, because the document will have been written before this advancement. Okay, so let's see. New. The new family moves in and they install genetically modified grass, which is blue. And we'll need something that sort of draws him to those people, because I want him to kind of be drawn to those people, but also repulsed by the grass. So he's got this internal conflict. What if maybe he's a what if he's a chess player? And this family has a kid, and the kid is a very good chess player, and our main character is a very good chess player. So the kid and the old guy form a relationship around chess. So he wants to have this relationship with this kid because he's a chess player and he doesn't get to play any good games. But it's a problem having a relationship with the kid because of the family's grass. Okay. And we'll make the kid. We'll have a daughter. So we need a we need some big event that's coming to add pressure to this grass situation. So we'll have like a best yard or like best subdivision in the state, sort of a competition where this guy is going to get judged as HOA president. And the end will be, I'm thinking that the end of the story is the main character has to decide ultimately between having a subdivision that cannot win the competition because they've got yards that have color changing grass and so they're disqualified. He has to choose between that, because if he kicks the family out of his subdivision, then he won't get to play chess anymore. So in the end, he chooses his... In the end, he'll choose not to have the most beautiful subdivision, but to have this family in his life, and he can play chess. He and the daughter can play chess. Okay, so that is a basic outline. Let me see if I can read it in story form. So we open on this very... we open on a beautiful subdivision. Not one blade of grass is out of place. Everything is absolutely gorgeous. It's all running like clockwork, thanks to our HOA president. We need a name for this guy. What is his name? Bernard Shipley. I don't know why. I just like Bernard Shipley. I tell you what, here's how we'll open. We'll open with this beautiful neighborhood, and we'll open on this party scene that's like something out of a lawn catalog. You know, we'll have paper lanterns hanging. It'll be an evening. The sun is beginning to go down. You can tell that the weather is perfect because, you know, everybody will be dressed in party clothes. The women will be wearing sweaters over their party dresses. And the men will... this is all taking place outside, obviously, because you want to show off the neighborhood. And the gentlemen will be wearing suits, and they'll have their coats on. It'll be one of those, like a beautiful fall/spring day. And we'll open on a ceremony where Bernard Shipley is taking control as HOA president. And we'll need some details in there to show that he's worked long and hard for this honor, and he's finally enjoying the fruits of his labor. And then we'll move from there to his first yard judgment as HOA president. And everything will go nicely. And as during that yard judgment, he'll meet the family, and the mom and dad will be super, super nice people, but they'll be like, the house will be messy, and there are kids running everywhere, and they're just those kind of parents who really aren't sweating the kids. I mean, I think their opinion is, as long as nobody's got a broken bone, nobody's seriously injured, we're going to get some food in these kids, we're going to make sure homework gets done, and we're going to try to get them to bed at a reasonable hour. But as long as all of that is covered, we're not really going to worry about kids running around or digging holes in the yard or goofing off or whatever they're doing. So they're those kind of parents, and that kind of parenting is probably bothersome to our main character, Bernard, because he was an only child, and he was raised by very anal retentive sort of helicopter hovery parents, and we'll have some flashback opportunities there. So he'll meet this family, but he'll let it go, especially when he discovers that the daughter plays chess, because he loves chess so much, and he finds out that she's got some, you know, she's got a national rank, she's a ranked chess player, and he's like, you know, maybe we could play sometime. So they sit down and play, and her game is just is unbelievable. It's a thing of beauty to behold. And she's got, here we go. And she's got the chance to be the chess player that he wasn't, because he didn't have that middle game part of his game. You know, chess, the beginning of a chess game is all about basically rote memorization of your opening, but then the middle is all about creativity. So maybe she's not so strong on her opening, but the middle part of her game is crazy good. Like, she just has this amazing intuition, and she's able to really bring that creativity to the game that Bernard was never able to bring, and it does something to him. He's got to help her become the chess player that he was never able to become, because it's this great failing in his life. This is going to be such a good book, guys. Okay, so he's not. So he meets the daughter, and they start playing chess together and enjoying that, and she's rising in her ability at chess. But their relationship comes under strain because her mom and dad have installed this new kind of grass that can change color, and it's blue. It has a blue hue at first, and Bernard is annoyed by that, but then it becomes fully blue. And his disagreement with the parents is that they're saying, well, look, there's nothing in the HOA documents that say our grass can't be blue. And he's like, well, obviously it can't be blue. And we got this decision about the most beautiful neighborhood in the state coming up. And ultimately, he'll have to decide to go to that. And what we need is, we'll need a chess tournament where he doesn't go to the chess tournament because they've had a fight. He won't go to the chess tournament because they've had a fight about the grass. So at the end of the chess tournament, when she wins, we'll have somebody ask the daughter, hey, where did you learn to play like that? Your opening has improved so much. You've really grown your game. How did that happen? And she'll say, somebody I used to know. Oh, guys, really tugging at the heartstrings now. And she'll say, oh, it's somebody I used to know. And, oh, well, where could we meet this person? I've got lots of students that would love to be able to take from a mentor like that. And she'll say, no, it's just, he's not available. He's turned into an asshole. And then he'll be considering an offer from another subdivision, maybe. Yeah, he'll be considering an offer as an HOA president of another subdivision, which is the one that won that year. But he will go, he'll be looking around at the houses, and he'll go in, oh God, here's the end, you guys, the end! He'll go in this new subdivision, and he'll be looking around the houses, and the houses will all be like perfectly cookie cutter, no chessboard to be found. And then he'll go into this one house, and he will see a chessboard, and he'll grab it, and he'll hold it, and he'll say, ah, this is what I've been looking for. This is the thing. Does somebody in the house play chess? Do any of you play chess? And the couple that own the house will say, chess? No, that's a mock-up of what our new kitchen floors are going to look like. And then he realizes what a shithead he's been, what a mistake he's made. He leaves, he goes tearing through the neighborhoods, he drives through, oh God, here we go, guys, here's a great detail. He gets to the neighborhood, and he's dying to get to the family's house to tell them that he was wrong about the grass, he doesn't care about the grass, he needs to have this relationship with the game of chess, he wants to help their daughter continue to grow, but he can't get to their house because the road is blocked. So he has to drive his own car through his own yard, destroying his own grass, in order to get to their house and tell them he made a mistake. He loves playing chess. Having a relationship with somebody and helping them grow their game is way more important than any HOA award could ever be. And in the end, we close with a barbecue. We see a shot of his yard. This sounds like a screenplay, but we'll learn that his yard is growing. The trench that he made when he drove through it is coming back. It's going to end up being fine. The bluegrass is beautiful. Other yards have different color grass, and it's fine. It's gorgeous. He's totally cool with it. He's meeting with everybody, and we see that he is happier than we've ever seen him before, and all the people in the neighborhood are kind of respecting him now. They've gained respect for him because he's made this change. Oh, guys. Boom. Done and done. Ha. Oh. Now, the only thing we need is a title. It needs to be something like something that includes the ideas of growth, of chess. Let me think here. I'm thinking something along the lines of the middle game. I think that's maybe it'll be called the middle game. Yeah, the middle game. There we go. There is the outline for the middle game. Oh, man. That feels really good. Guys, thank you so much for listening. This is my new podcast, The Outliners. You've just heard my made-up-on-the-spot outline for the novel, The Middle Game. If you are an author, I hope that you will submit an outline. If you join this, if you enjoyed this, please subscribe on iTunes. And I'm really enjoying this idea, and I want to keep it going. So I hope you'll join me. Thanks again. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.